Hey, welcome back to the Gonzo Chronicles. This is your host, Cyrus Alderwood, and today's episode, we got some really, really interesting stuff. We're talking with Tobias Wayland, who has a new book that's out called The Lake Michigan Mothman, High Strangeness in the Midwest. If you're a fan of any of the Mothman lore and history, you're going to love this show. First of all, I want to thank those who have tuned in for my first couple of full-length episodes. We've got some really interesting feedback on especially the first show where we talked about the QAnon phenomenon, and keep your emails coming in. If you have any thoughts or want me to read them on the air, you can email me at cyrus.alderwood@gmail.com, and also even email me about today's episode, and I'll read them online. If we need to follow up with our guests, we certainly will. Tobias, I want to thank you for coming on today. We're talking about the Mothman mystery, and most people, when they think of the Mothman, they think about the old the movie The Mothman that had Richard Gere, but the mystery from the 60s and from Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Tell us a little bit about what got you started on this book and your interest in Mothman.
Sure. So thanks for having me on. Back in 2017, my wife and I, Emily, had started the Singular Fortean Society, and one of the things that we do through there is paranormal journalism in addition to investigation. So if I see an interesting news story developing, you know, I like to cover that for our website, because I feel like the mainstream news doesn't always do a particularly a thorough job. And so I had seen this trio of weird winged creature sightings come through the Mutual UFO Network's case management system. And it was three sightings, two of which really described a large anomalous flying creature, and the last one described something roughly humanoid. And so these all took place in Chicago, and naturally I was very interested. You know, like, we only live in Madison, Wisconsin, which is about 2 hours north of Chicago, so this was pretty local for us.
Okay, yeah, I knew you were from Wisconsin, so I wasn't sure how far of a trip you had to make to get into this research.
Really, really not far. I mean, honestly, that's one of the things that has been a big advantage for us in doing this, is how easy it is for us to just get down to that area, and really all, like, just all around Lake Michigan. And so I had seen these stories coming through, and I was like, well, you know what, like, this would make a good article. I think this is something people would be interested in. I'm just going to cover it for our website. And there wasn't a lot of information about those initial cases available. I mean, MUFON is usually pretty tight-lipped about their investigations. They don't share a lot of information very readily. But beyond that, I had come to find out, just by talking to Sam Maranto later on, who's the state director for MUFON in Illinois, like, frankly, they didn't have a lot of follow-up on those. And so, you know, if those had been the only three reports to come out, I think it would have just kind of gone away. I think it would have been largely ignored, and people, it just would have considered it, you know, a flash in the pan sort of,
right,
mildly interesting anomaly. But that's not what happened.
Right. So the article I think you're referring to, and I've pulled this up, so if anybody listening wants to look this up, this is from April 27th of 2017, and it's on MUFON.com. Mothman-type creature reported over Chicago. And they laid out the three cases here. They you're right about being tight-lipped. There's not a lot of detail in any of this, other than maybe some quotes by the people who were witnesses. But the three cases I think you're referring to took place April 15th of 2017, between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. So there was like a four-hour window where there was credible witness sightings three different times of this, you know, winged creature, as you said. And in the Chicago area, which is Chicago, you think Mothman, you think out in the woods, Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Here we're talking about, you know, one of the biggest cities in the country.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a little strange. You know,
to say the least. Yeah. I mean, that is.
Right. Well, one of the things that stood out about a lot of these were their proximity to natural areas. And so a lot of people probably don't know, especially if you haven't been down there, like, you don't have to get very far outside of Chicago before you've got a lot of more natural areas. And there are some relatively, I wouldn't say isolated, but relatively natural areas sort of within the city itself. I mean, you know, you've got at least two rivers that kind of go right through the heart of everything there. So, there are areas of the city where, it's not all Michigan Avenue, you know, like it's not all just downtown skyscrapers, just thriving cityscape. So, it was definitely weird, but most of the sightings, certainly the sightings that I consider credible, are the ones that are happening in these more out of the way areas. And okay. And so something that we saw developing pretty early on was these sightings happening in relation to natural areas, you know, think parks, conservation areas, rivers, like I mentioned, obviously, there's a connection there to Lake Michigan, although really more than anything, that was sort of a convenient geographical landmark. You know, I don't know that Lake Michigan is particularly relevant. Other than that, these sightings seem to be happening around it for whatever reason.
In one of those cases on the MUFON article, there was a couple out celebrating her husband's birthday with some other friends, right, on a boat, and they were about 2 miles off, 2 miles out on the lake. And that was the first sighting around 10 p.m. And they said they looked up and saw what looked like a giant bat, which kind of freaked me out because the lady it was her husband's birthday. She said it was as tall as her husband, who's 6'4".
Right.
And my first thought is like, how can, if you're looking and seeing this in the sky, how do you gauge that with something, unless there's something in the background to, see the size.
Sure.
How accurate can someone be just looking up and seeing that?
Not very. Okay. Honestly, that's something that I have seen repeatedly. And honestly, I actually started as an investigator looking into UFO sightings, and it is very difficult, even if you are a trained observer and you know what you're doing, it is still immensely difficult to judge the size of an aerial object. I mean, if you don't know how far away it is, it really is almost impossible without more information. And so I think that there are some pretty big discrepancies in certain eyewitness accounts where, people will describe seeing something flying, they think they have some idea how far away it is, but I mean, it's really, like I said, it's just too difficult for them to gauge accurately. So they'll estimate a wingspan at 10 or 12 feet, but frankly, it just as easily could be 4 to 6 feet or right. 7 feet or something much more reasonable for a number of indigenous birds,
Now, so I live near a place called South Holston Lake, and it's no big thing to see a crane flying along the top of the water. And I've seen cranes that I thought, hey, this thing's big enough to kick my ass, right? It's a pterodactyl. But when it gets closer, obviously but I think the thing is where their feet hang back. They look a lot bigger. So, but it just didn't turn out that there were three sightings, though, Tobias. So there was like over two dozen.
Oh, wow. I mean, at this point, we've got over 100. So after those initial three sightings came out, you know, well, like I said, I really didn't know where this was going to go. And right after those came out, then suddenly all of these other sightings started flooding in, and they started coming in to Lon Strickler over at Phantoms and Monsters, and Manuel Navarrete over at UFO Clearinghouse. And so at this point, like, we're talking spring of 2017, I'm covering this as a journalist, basically. And so I, you know, of course, I wanted to reach out to those guys. As I kept seeing report after report come into them. And so, you know, I reached out and interviewed, I believe it was Manuel first in June of that year, and then Lon the following month in July. And, you know, I talked to them, and they were very forthcoming, very, very forthright about, you know, receiving these reports and talking about them and sort of vouching for witnesses' credibility and all of that stuff. And then it wasn't too long after that that I was more formally introduced to them. And then, I was invited to investigate because of our proximity. It just seemed a matter of convenience to have somebody else who could go down there and actually check stuff out and who was relatively close. And honestly, it wasn't too long after that we started receiving our own sighting reports, you know, because people can report any, you know, paranormal sighting through the Singular Fortean Society, because we don't just do journalism. We also go out and do investigations of anything. And so we started getting our own reports and here we are in 2020 There have been some slowdowns, but otherwise these sightings still seem pretty active, honestly.
When was the last sighting that you heard of?
The very last one, and I'm going to look this up to make sure that I am being accurate, but I know that, let's see here, we just had one reported relatively recently. Give me one second here. So I'm trying to remember if it was at the end of December, I believe, was the last one. Okay, beginning of December 2019. Yep, so I talked to a guy who worked out at O'Hare International Airport, and that's where most of the recent sightings have taken place, not necessarily all in the immediate vicinity of O'Hare, but, you know, in neighboring villages, Bensonville and Rosemont, for instance. But yeah, I talked to this guy who works out at O'Hare, and he told me about how he was driving home. He had worked until I believe it was about 10:30 at night, and he was leaving work, actually, and he was going to go meet his friend for a drink. That's right. And so he's driving past this there's this road sort of on the outskirts of O'Hare, and he's driving down it, and to his left is this kind of open area. So there's this big field there, and there's a fence in front of it, and he sees what he described as this, you know, tall black humanoid figure, and he describes seeing these glowing red eyes. And one thing that he described that has been pretty common among the people who I think are the most likely to have had an actual paranormal experience was this intense feeling of fear. He actually went so far as to describe the feeling he got from seeing this thing as evil. Like he could somehow sense that this thing was actually evil. And And yeah, that was the most recent sighting report specifically of a flying humanoid. Although there have been other sighting reports from that area of other anomalous activity. So I know that Manuel got a UFO report over that area not too long ago. I want to say that was like January 23rd.
Okay.
So that was actually pretty recent.
Yeah, we're almost not even a month.
Right.
Investigation, the people you've talked to, have you come across anybody else who said they felt that feeling of dread or that sense of evil?
Yeah, absolutely. So throughout the course of this investigation, I've sort of been able to formulate two separate profiles for these encounters. On the one hand, you have these daytime sightings of something that people usually see flying. It's usually pretty far away. They try to estimate its size, and it's probably pretty big. But, you know, again, like we were talking about, it's very difficult for people to estimate the size of aerial objects. And those people might be startled. They might be confused by what they're seeing, but they don't often report this stark feeling of terror. The other profile that has developed is of people who see something at night, and their sighting is often much closer. They will often see what they describe as a winged humanoid on the ground, so they're not trying to estimate something that's flying around, and they'll report other really strange attributes like glowing red eyes. And in a lot of those cases, people do report this feeling of abject terror, and will also often report something, something similar to, say, a palpable sense of evil. Now, that's something that a witness actually literally described to me. She said that what she felt coming off of this thing was a palpable sense of evil. So it's whatever it is, it's clearly having a very strong effect on some people. And I think that that's directly related to this particular profile, because those daytime sightings in a lot of cases, I think, are probably fairly mundane, like misidentified birds and such. But those nighttime cases, like the ones where it just couldn't possibly be anything normal, if you are willing to, you know, entertain the testimony of these witnesses, those are the ones where, yeah, it's scaring the crap out of people.
So how many of those do you think were actually credible? And the other question I had is, out of all the investigations that you've done, how many were you able to debunk versus those you still have questions about or actually maybe even verified?
Sure. So now, as far as how many witnesses I think were credible, now, certainly everyone with whom I have spoken, I consider credible. If I don't think that someone is credible, I'm not going to publish their sighting. I also believe that everybody with whom Lon or Manuel has spoken directly is certainly credible. They're the same way. They're not going to publish somebody's report if they, you know, seem like a crank or they're trying to hoax or something. Very early in the investigation, I know that there were reports being published whose sources weren't necessarily verified, certainly not as well as later reports. And so something that I personally do is I won't publish a report if I'm not able to have direct contact with the witness. Like if somebody sends me a one-off email and I never hear from them again, I'm not going to publish that as news because I wasn't able to verify anything in it. But early on, honestly, Lon and Manuel have a slightly different tack, and I think that's because of the more blog format of their websites. And I'm not saying one is better than the other, because I think there's some value in sort of the, okay, here's all of the information I receive, do with it what you will approach. I just think that in terms of this investigation, because some of these sightings were not able to be verified, and some of them were verified very, very well and involved on-site investigation and multiple witness interviews and other really, really solid forms of evidence, we have to address that discrepancy. As far as what percentage that represents, the sightings that weren't able to be verified, I honestly don't know, because I never sat down and actually counted. But I will say this, in the book, I do go out of my way to let everybody know exactly how much contact was had with each witness and what was done to follow up with them. And, if people went out and there was on-site investigation and so on and so forth. So, like I said, it's important. It's something to be addressed. And I feel like it was eventually addressed. Now, very early on in this investigation, like I said, I was covering it journalistically. And this is something I literally say in the book, if I knew then what I know now, I would have done some things differently. I would have tried to lock things down and really, and I'm sure Lon and Manuel would agree with some of this, and I think that we would have went about things a little bit differently, trying to control the flow of credible information versus just publishing everything received, because I think ultimately that's led to a lot of confusion.
Now, does the book clear a lot of that up, though?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it does. I mean, I really do take great pains in here to let everybody know exactly what was done. So in those minority of cases, and it is a minority of cases, frankly, where there was no follow-up that was able to be had with a witness, I mean, I'm going to tell you that, frankly. And in the majority of cases where, at the very least, a witness was interviewed directly, I'm going to tell you that. And so, anybody who reads this book is going to know by the time they're done with it which cases are the most credible, because they're going to have all of the information that went into each of those investigations, and they're going to be able to look at it and go, okay, well, this sighting, they were able to do this, this, and this. This sighting, there wasn't as much follow-up, so, maybe that's one that I don't take as seriously.
Yeah. Now, I noticed you've made the rounds as a guest speaker at conventions and various events where you, and this is readily available on YouTube if anybody wants to go look some of these up, that in your presentation you show likely what many people probably saw, which I think lends the book a lot of credibility, because again, you kind of approach it from a skeptic's point of view, but you want to treat the subject with respect, but at the same time, how many of these in your gut, in your research, do you think, these, maybe a certain percentage of the ones you researched, they might actually have seen what we all know as the Mothman?
I would say It's and because this I actually did count. It was about, I want to say, 40 to 45%. I think have a relatively strong likelihood of being a misidentified bird, but that leaves, you know, half or just over half that I think stand a pretty good likelihood of being related to or the same phenomenon as Point Pleasant.
Okay. Now, before we came on the air, I looked up, just out of curiosity, I looked up to see what the biggest bat on record is, and I forgot the name of the bat by now, but it only weighs like maybe 3 pounds, but I think it has like a 5.5 foot wingspan. Oh, is that what it is? Okay. I mean, if I looked up in the air at dawn or you know, at night, and I saw that, you know, especially if some kind of light hit its eyes, and you know how like a cat's eyes reflect or a dog's eyes in the dark, I would not know what the hell I was looking at, to be quite honest with you. But you know, but for you to, and since you're aware of this, you know, that bat already, I'm sure you took that into consideration when talking to people locally there. I don't even know what area that bat is indigenous to, but you know, when I saw that, I was like, wow, that's, and the Mothman phenomenon is not just a Point Pleasant thing or a, you know, a Lake Michigan thing. This has been a global phenomenon for what, going on 4 decades or longer?
I mean, now the modern sightings, of course, began in Point Pleasant in, you know, 66 to 67. There have been other, well, at least rumors of sightings elsewhere, you know, like the Blackbird of Chernobyl and things like that. Now, I haven't seen a lot of good evidence surrounding many of the stories that have been circulating outside of, say, Point Pleasant or now Lake Michigan. Using the Blackbird of Chernobyl as an example, I don't know that anybody has properly sourced the origin of that particular story. You know, at least, you know, with Point Pleasant or the area around Lake Michigan, there are people who have come forward. There are people who have gone on the record, and you can point to them to be like, okay, this person, this literal person right here, who we all know exists, said that they saw this thing. And for a lot of these other sightings, well, in areas, for again, like the Blackbird of Chernobyl, I don't know that we have that. And so while there are, you know, quite a few of them that have made the rounds, I just don't know how seriously we can take them. The one that just off the top of my head, I think has the highest likelihood of actually happening was the Owlman of Cornwall.
Okay.
And so this was actually back in 1976. Yeah, I believe it was two girls said that they saw this thing. You know, relatively consistent with what people had earlier reported in Point Pleasant. Only it was in this graveyard over in England. So yeah, I mean, any time we get something like that where you've got definite witnesses you can point to, you know, who are willing to say that, hey, I actually saw this thing. Now that is pretty interesting to me.
Now the book is on Amazon. How much is it on Amazon right now?
I believe now, because sometimes sometimes Amazon does this fun thing where they just put things on sale. But the normal price right now is $19.99.
Okay, and it's also on Kindle. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, okay. You can get the Kindle version for $9.99.
They do the same thing to my books. Like, some will go on sale. I'm like, yeah, you guys might should have told me first. Yeah, that'd be nice.
I know, right? I'll be like, oh, hey, everybody, look, it's on sale for, like, you know, $2 off today. So.
No, can people contact you and get a signed copy of this?
That is actually something that we're going to be rolling out soon.
Okay.
Now, we have the capability to take sales through our website. It's just something where we've been working on the logistics of doing that. But I do know that that's really, really popular, and a lot of my other, you know, author friends do that. So, yeah, I mean, not right this second, but look for it soon. Like, soon as in, like, next month soon.
Okay. So. Now, one thing I want to kind of switch gears a little bit, because – Well, before I switch gears to go to the 40th, Singular 40th Society, you're working on a project where you're raising funds to make a documentary about these sightings?
Oh, yeah. So our friends over at Small Town Monsters contacted us to basically see if we wanted to do an installment in their on the Trail of series about the Lake Michigan Mothman. And so, you know, honestly, anybody listening, hopefully is already familiar with Small Town Monsters and the work they do. But if you're not, I very, very highly encourage you to go check them out. Now you can see a lot of their documentaries for free on Amazon Prime if you are a member there. If not, honestly, if it's a subject in which you are interested, I would just buy the DVD because they are very high quality, and they just make fantastic documentaries. Now, what we're doing with the Lake Michigan Mothman is currently they're running their Kickstarter, and so that's something that they do every single year, because they are a smaller production company, and that's what pays for their you know, efforts. And so what we're doing is, if we get to, I believe the benchmark is $70,000, that will fund the Lake Michigan Mothman on the Trail of. So now that's not just for that. Like, that money actually is going towards it's got to be four or five different documentaries.
Okay.
So yeah, and they're at, last time I checked, it was right around $64,000.
Okay.
So we are very, very close. We've got just over 2 weeks left, and so, you know, anybody who loves open, honest, like, authentic paranormal documentary filmmaking, you know, I would definitely encourage you to check out Small Town Monsters, check out their Kickstarter, and yeah, I mean, anybody who wants to contribute, obviously, I think that would be great.
Okay, and I did want to bring up, I follow you on Twitter, and I noticed some of the social media posts. You guys have, after you and your wife had finished these projects, and you were getting a lot of shade about this particular book and about your presentations. What can you tell us a little bit about what's going on with those who are kind of giving you pushback on this?
Oh, sure. So, you know, honestly, most people have been very, very supportive. But I will say, and I do address this very, very quickly in the book, like, I don't want the book to be about this, but the fact is, there is a lot of drama in this industry. I know that's going to come as a huge shock to people. But it's true. And so there are just a couple of people who have a vested interest in misinforming people about this investigation. And so, you know, if you hear somebody who is making a lot of claims, you know, about different elements, you know, like, there are different things going around, and it is literally like one or two people. So if you hear somebody disparaging this investigation without really any evidence, without really ever having spoken to a single witness, you know, I would ask that you just think critically about what they're saying. And you know, honestly, you can always reach out to me with questions if you're not able to find the answers that you're looking for, because I think that, you know, anybody who really engages with this investigation as I've covered it will see that the accusations are groundless. They're just baseless accusations of well, I guess I can give you an example because people are probably going to wonder what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, like what are they accusing you of? Sort of, you know.
Sure. So, yeah. There are people who will say things like, "Well, you know, none of these witnesses exist because nobody's ever come forward." Well, that's a lie. I literally just talked to an ex-police officer named David Ramos, who was a 15-year veteran of the Chicago Police Department, and he came forward and he went on the record. And before that, we had talked to many other witnesses who were willing to go on the record. Now, it's not as common as it used to be. A lot of people prefer anonymity, and in the internet age, I really don't blame them. But the fact is, people have come forward, and beyond that, you know, one of the things that you sort of have to do as an investigator in this field is be willing to stake your own credibility on things. And so, you know, I verify people's info. I verify as many facts about their sighting as I can, and that work sort of has to speak for itself. But that was one of the really most frustrating things. And the fact is, the reason that stuff like that is being said by the very few people who are saying it is as petty as they really just want to make this investigation about themselves. It's a relatively popular investigation that is currently active, and there are some people who think that they will be able to find celebrity by trying to attach their name to this in any way they can, even if it's just to try to tear it down, because certainly we're not going to invite them to partake in it. Partners or anything. And so, okay. That's really all you're seeing. And quite frankly, I would be surprised at this point if people were still hearing a lot of that. I think sort of what we've got is the death rattle of that nonsense. I think that this book honestly has it's quieted that down. You know, the one or two people who were actually really out there saying anything. It's tough to really argue with. Well, it's tough to argue with the book itself, but it's also tough to argue with the reviews, frankly. You know, when people like Troy Taylor and Nick Redfern and Seth Breedlove and people who are well known in this industry start coming out, saying, "Hey, look, like maybe I was skeptical at first, but I read this book and it cleared up basically every issue I had with this investigation." When people like that come out and give those kinds of reviews, you know, at that point, if you're still making baseless accusations, you're probably the a-hole here, you know?
Okay. Yeah, with seeing some of the comments on social media, I just kind of felt like I had to ask because, it's all about the credibility of the book and the research that you had done, so when you see that, you know, you just kind of have to ask to be on the safe side. I am going to switch gears a little bit because it's not just things with the Mothman that you've researched. On your website, singularfortian.com, you have a news section in there, which I was really impressed with all the – this is really recent news. You do a lot of updating on your website. I don't on mine, so kudos to you if you find time to do this much research because –
that's a lot of work.
These articles are really impressive and well thought out, well written. And but I guess anybody listening, the first thing they're going to ask, which is the first thing I'm going to ask, is the hell is Singular Fortian? what is that? It's a society, but what is that?
sure. No, and that is by far the most common question asked. So the word Fortian comes from Charles Fort, the early 20th century collector of weird news stories. And so what he would do is he would collect these weird news stories from all over the world, and then he would put them together in these collections, and he would write about them. And he took this holistic approach to the anomalous. So one of the most famous quotes attributed to him is, "One measures a circle beginning anywhere." And what that means is, by studying any aspect of the paranormal, you can understand something about all of it. So in noting these similarities between hauntings and alien abduction and cryptid reports and everything else, I think that gives us a better understanding of the root causes of these seemingly disparate phenomena. And so, you know, that's how we approach these subjects. You know, we investigate everything. And so, you know, a Fortean just seemed appropriate. And then as far as singular, now, of course, that can mean one, but it also means unique or remarkable. And something that I feel very strongly about is that the paranormal is really largely comprised of experiential phenomena. And because of that, everybody's input is valuable. Everybody's input is unique, and each person is themselves remarkable, and their experience is worth sharing. And so it's not so much that, you know, we are a unique or remarkable society, although I like to think maybe we are at least a little. It's that we want to be a community, a society that is made up of these unique and remarkable individuals who sort of follow this open-minded Fortean philosophy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, it's a good answer on that, because I was so curious about, like, what when I saw Fortean news, I'm like, what is that? But okay, so that clears that up. And I was just really impressed on your website, just the range of investigations you guys have done, and you actually have an A to Z of all the different kinds of creatures and phenomenon out there, from aliens all the way down to, you know, to the Yeti, right? So, I mean, it's pretty incredible. How many different, I guess, investigations, not just on Mothman, have you done? I mean, have you did ghost hunts? Have you researched and did investigations into one of the things that creeped me out was, like, the black-eyed children that I noticed you had listed on here?
Sure. So, you know, personally, I've investigated everything from, UFOs to alien abduction to cryptids, you know, obviously Mothman, but also, like, Bigfoot, Dogman. Yeah, we've done ghost hunts. Boy, that's probably most of it, frankly.
That's a lot. Yeah, oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, yeah, I was just gonna say, as far as black-eyed kids, you know, I've only ever received one real credible report on that, and I wasn't able to really dig into it because the person who told me about it insisted that I just never share it. And so this person, who obviously I can't name, you know, told me this really incredible story, and obviously they didn't want anything out of it, but they also were just insistent that they wanted to share it, but not have it, you know, spread anywhere. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'd love to get more, but that seems like one of those phenomena that it's sort of taken on a life of its own, you know, like there's so many creepypastas out there on the internet that it's really difficult to find credible sighting reports.
And there's so many paranormal shows on TV that, you know, they brush past that on occasion. Once in a while, I've seen maybe two different segments about black-eyed children, but the two that I saw really creeped me out. You know, one last question for you is, you know, a lot of people I've noticed in just the things that I do and from, you know, my experience, people don't really, they care about what you do, but the bit, but they care more about why you do it. So is there any particular experience that you had, or because I know you work a lot with your wife, with the society too, is there any particular event that happened that you can kind of point to that said, yeah, this got me so interested in the paranormal that I had to actually become an investigator?
Sure. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, honestly, I have experienced strange things. It was a series of like shadow people sightings and nighttime visitation that sort of walked the line between haunting and alien abduction that really got me started on this. And back when I was a kid, you know, there was no internet or anything. And so I didn't really have many people I could talk to about it. You know, you tell your parents stuff like that and they just assume it's a kid's imagination or something, but it absolutely wasn't. I mean, I was terrified to go to bed every night, just waiting for something to happen. And so I would, you know, I would ride my bike down to the library and I would read books by these authors like John Keel and Lauren Coleman and Brad Steiger and you know, Whitley Strieber and all of these guys who seem to know, maybe if they didn't know exactly what was going on, they were, you know, speculating about it. Like they had some ideas, but more importantly, it let me know that I wasn't alone. You know, there were other people out there who were experiencing similar things. And by the time I was an adult in my late 20s, I wanted to give something back. You know, I was inspired by those guys to try to be that same kind of person. So if I can, through investigating and sharing people's experiences, help somebody, if I can help them understand what's happening to them better, or if I can help somebody feel less alone just by, you know, reading something that I've written over the internet or reading my book or something, then that's what I want to do. You know, like that's literally why I got into this.
Wow. Yeah. Seeing shadow people at a young age, it would certainly terrify me. It's amazing how, when you see things like that, some people run away from it, some people run to it. And yeah. I've met a lot of people that have done those things and talked to, I've been fortunate. I've talked to people who've experienced some strange things. I personally never have, but, you know, the fact that some people have done this and had enough courage to kind of step forward and look into these things, pretty fascinating. What's next for you and with the Singular Fortean Society?
Well, you know, we've got a few irons in the proverbial fire. You know, these Mothman sightings don't seem to be going anywhere. So I'm sure we've got more work with that down the road. We've also been doing some interesting stuff with Adam Benedict over at the Pine Barrens Institute and Jay Bachochin, who relatively recently released his documentary Finding Jay, which is available on Amazon Prime, in the southern unit of Wisconsin's Kettle Moraine State Forest. So this is an area known for weird orb activity, dogmen, Bigfoot, and we've had some interesting experiences out there. And so I think some sort of documentation of that area would be very interesting for people. For my own, you know, sort of personal project, I like to sort of concentrate on high strangeness. So I've got a book sort of rattling around in my head right now, just sort of concentrating on the commonalities inherent to high strangeness reports. So yeah, you know, I think we've got a few things for people to hopefully look forward to.
Okay, and they can follow you on Twitter.
Absolutely.
And singular40n.com.
Yeah, you can, if you're interested in learning more about what we do, you can find us online. The Singular Fortean Society website is singular40n.com. Otherwise, we're on all of the social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr. At least, you know, that's all of the social media people our age know about. There's probably other ones, but I'm just not that cool.
Yeah, I stopped with Facebook and Twitter. At some point, I run out of time. I lied. Instagram. I totally forgot about that. But, Tobias, thanks for being on. I certainly appreciate it, and thanks for sharing the book with us. And hopefully you guys will meet the minimum and get the documentary made, because I'd really like to see that too. So,
yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so any other interesting things come up, feel free to contact me and come back on, and we'll do it again.
Yeah, that sounds great, Cyrus. Thank you so much.
All right, have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
All right, folks. So thanks again for Tobias Whalen for being on. Really looking forward to kind of getting back into that book. I'd started and then just kind of like life got in the way. I'm sure if you're listening, you know what that's like. So as you're listening, have you had any sightings, whether it be Mothman or any kind of cryptids, any kind of strange things in the realm of odd or paranormal that's happened to you? Feel free and email me, cyrus.alderwood@gmail.com. Let me know about it, and I'll talk about it on the show. Until next time, thanks again for stopping by here at the Gonzo Chronicles. I'll be back probably next week with a new episode. Feel free to share the podcast with your friends. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me also at my website, cyrusalderwood.com. And we'll talk about some more weird stuff, folks. Until next time, thanks.